Good evening, everyone. I'm Kelly Summers. You may have heard me on the odd occasion pop up on the From the Rookery End podcast. I'm currently out in Australia presenting coverage of the Women's World Cup, which means that come Saturday at 3 p.m. UK time, when it's midnight here, I'm going to be scouring the streets for any bars anywhere open showing the first game of the season. In fact, I'm probably going to be the only person that wishes I was in Watford rather than in Sydney on Saturday. I'm also pretty gutted that I'm missing the first ever From the Rookery End live podcast. I can't believe that it's taken the boys 14 years to do a live podcast, and they've chosen a time when I'm on the other side of the world. Not too happy about that. Anyway, I hope you have a great evening in the company of John, DCW and Mike. Welcome to From the Rookery End Live.
Thank you very much. This is our pre-season podcast here live at Mad Squirrel Watford.
Hey!
And we didn't rehearse that at all. My name is John. If you've never seen me before, because you've only ever heard me in the podcast, this is what I look like. Next to me is Mr. Mike Parkin.
I thought I'd give everyone that gave up their Thursday evening to come and see us a bit of a treat. So I got my shorts on, got the legs out. Do you know what my friends call my legs?
I dread to think.
They call them the hairy baguettes. Anyway, hi everyone. Thanks for coming down and witnessing my hairy baguettes.
And DCW also.
Sincere apologies to anyone who has attended tonight expecting to see the weekly quiz. You're not going to get that, but we'll do our best to entertain you nonetheless.
So thank you so much for being here. Mike, everyone who's listened to the podcast before knows your mindset. Are you raring to go? Are you ready for Saturday?
I prefer cricket to football. Definitely. So, look, I mean, you can see how many people are here. Thank you, everyone, for coming. It's far exceeded our expectations. We thought it might be a couple of family members and a stray cat or something. But you can see the excitement about a new football season starting by the people that are here tonight.
Is that the right word?
Yeah. And everyone always laughs when they meet me in person. They say, oh, you're a lot more miserable in person than you are on the podcast. I'm even worse in person. Am I excited? I'm looking forward to what unfolds, because I think as Watford fans, we've been very lucky over the years to have... It's just been a roller coaster, hasn't it? There's just been so much going on. There's never been a dull moment. I know they're all cliches, but it's true. And you never know what's going to happen with football until you turn up. You certainly never know what's going to happen with Watford until you turn up at Vicarage Road. So in that regard, yeah, I am looking forward to it. But
I don't
think we're going to be very good, are we?
It's interesting you just gave a little high-pitched yeah there, because we were having a chat with Jacob from WD18 over there a bit earlier on. We asked him the same question. How are you feeling ahead of Saturday? And he just went, yeah. And I think that is... very much the noise.
Because Steve Gerrard's probably going to take over as manager by the end of the event.
I don't think anyone's quite sure what to expect. The end of last season was so chastening. It was, you know, it was a real sorry mess by the end of it, wasn't it? And we are, as football fans, we naturally want to be optimistic at this time of year. It's sort of in our bones to be like, oh, great, the new season's here, some new players. But then you think about what's happened last year and before that, and there's still that lingering sense of... you know, despair, really, for many reasons. But we should be optimistic if we can. So we're in that sort of half space in the middle where we don't quite know how to feel.
The reason I'm optimistic is because it literally cannot be any worse than last year. And on a side...
Oh, it can. It really, really can.
I mean, are you definitely recording this?
Yeah.
It's clipped up for the end of the... But in all seriousness, if you think about the last 3 years, we had behind closed doors, which was horrific for a whole number of reasons. Then we got relegated, and then we had last year, which for me was such a difficult season to watch Watford. I was going to the games more out of duty than anything, just not expecting anything to happen. And nothing did happen. They delivered on that front. My expectations were met. But it's been a really, really problematic, I think, difficult time to be a Watford fan over the last 3 years. And I think this season feels better in terms of how we're attacking it. The new coach feels like he's got a pretty clear way of playing. He's trimmed the squad to the extent that I got a call earlier asking if I'd I'd play. But he's trimmed the squad right back. We know everyone we've spoken to, Barnsley fans, West Brom fans, have spoken about his clear way of playing. It seems like there'll be a definite expectation placed on the players that are left at Vicarage Road. And I think that hasn't necessarily been there for the last couple of years. Last year in particular, it felt like we had good players on paper, but it looked like they'd been sent out and just said, well, you're half decent, go out and get on with it. There didn't seem to be any cohesion, any plan. And that was really hard to watch as a supporter, I felt. We pay the money, we travel the length and breadth of the country, we invest emotionally, we invest financially, we give it all our time. And then they go out and don't really look like they know what they're doing. And I know that sounds reductive, but I don't know how you guys feel in here. But it felt to me we were watching a side that quite frankly didn't know what they were doing. And that's hard to watch.
It is, but I think time we move on.
Yeah,
you weren't forgetting about that.
You weren't expecting a short answer. From
I was
me.
Never expecting.
John,
Mark.
I'm
it's
really, really
long.
Excited about the start.
That was never going to happen. But we, you know, we got to say goodbye to a few people. The big one we knew, it was actually wonderful, I think, when João Pedro got to say goodbye to us in the last game of the season.
Terrible, though, wasn't it, as a goodbye?
What?
Thanks.
Well, I wasn't going to give a big, long speech because I don't think English is his first, you know, he's been here a while. But
Duolingo.
Are we going to massively miss him, Dave, or is he just going to give us lots more opportunities?
Hang on, why don't you give him the easy question? Are we going to miss João Pedro?
Well, yeah, of course we're going to miss him. I think, but obviously it was the right time for him to go. I'm actually like really excited to see him in the Premier League with Brighton. I'm looking at him last season. I felt so sorry for him at times because he was running around trying to sort of do everything himself, trying to make things happen. And I think that was because of, as you said, like the lack of long-term cohesiveness in our team. The fact that he had a different coach every 10, 15, 20 games or whatever. Now he's at a place where he can play proper football under a proper coach, and he already looks like he's going to be starting for Brighton and looks really good. But, you know, so good luck to him. But like my big concern about the players that we've lost, even though it was inevitable, the right time for Pedro to go, we all knew Sarr was going to go, we've lost over 50% of the goals that we scored last season between Sarr, Pedro, Davis, Anasson Belonga, who got two. they scored 30 goals of our 56 last season.
It's bad when your striker's got more vowels than goals, isn't it?
Exactly. So I think it is a big concern. We've not really had this sort of imbalance of outgoings and incomings for a while. We'll get on to the incomings in a little while. But, you know, we've all known that this is going to come for a long time. And we've also lost leadership in Cathcart and Cleverley and some others, Cabaselli. But we have lost real quality. Those players up there, Sarr and Pedro in particular, were the reasons why we were one of the favourites to do well last season to bounce straight back. They had all right seasons, mitigating circumstances. We don't have any of those players of any of that sort of level of quality anymore, which is a real concern.
Can I just pick up on what you said about João trying to do everything? And I think that was sort of indicative of where we were. It looked like he had the handbrake off completely and had free rein to go anywhere on the pitch. He was ending up at centre-back. It almost like he was like, right, I'm the best player. I'm going to get the ball at centre-back and go and do it all myself. Because we had decent attacking options on the pitch last season. And it looked like we didn't know how to shoot, let alone score. And that's what I was kind of getting at with why I am vaguely positive, bookmark this, at this stage of the season. Because it feels like he wouldn't get away with that this year. Valerian Ismail is going to have players well drilled. And we're not going to have that nonsense. Yes, João Pedro.
So he's not going to fit in? He won't fit in this year?
I think that's why I've got slightly higher hopes this year. Because I think we saw, with João Pedro going off-piste, effectively, off-script, I think, because if that's what he was being told...
It was a script, that's the issue.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think that it kind of sums it up, the mess that we were in last year. And I think while we're sad to see him go, the time was right, wasn't it? We had to clear the decks because, as I said, we've had 3 years that have been pretty miserable as supporters. And I think a big part of that is we had to rip the Band-Aid off, and part of that is... He's getting rid of some of the big names and some of the smaller ones as well.
Sorry, Ismail Sarr went, and the first, I will name him, Colin on our WhatsApp group, when the news broke and someone shared the link, he went, good. And that's the really weird thing. There's certainly a couple of gentlemen who sit near me in the rookery who will be very happy men because he's gone. I never agreed with them. Dave, he did a lot. He wasn't... Was it purely the fact that he cost 35 whatever million pounds that he wasn't... Did people think he was meant to be Erling Haaland and he wasn't? Or can you see why they were frustrated?
Yeah, I understand why people got frustrated. But I was always, you know, I always kind of tried to defend Sarr a little bit, even though there weren't times when obviously he wasn't sort of doing his best or fulfilling his potential. But really,
it didn't look like he was doing his best, but I think that's his...
Yeah, exactly. I think he did get a bit of a... you know, an unfair deal sometimes just because of his body language and stuff. But if you look at his Watford career in total, he had that amazing moment against Liverpool. You know, had that run under Pearson. He did more than anyone really that season to try and keep us up. And COVID really stopped him dead in his tracks. Who knows what would have happened if that didn't happen and we carried on that momentum. He did more than anyone else to get us promoted in the season, in the next season. And then if you look at his goal involvements, his contributions, really, in the following seasons, again, he delivered. He was one of our most productive players. Maybe we wanted more out of him. Maybe he'll go on to do more. The price tag weighed heavily on him. He wasn't the ideal player to be bought for Gracia when he was bought. Like, I sort of feel that, like, he was a victim of circumstances in so many ways. And I, again, similar to João Pedro, but for different reasons, it's best for him to leave now and just go and try and rebuild, go to Marseille, which is, you know, last year he was playing alongside British Sombolonga. Now he's going to be playing alongside Aubameyang. You know, he's gone to a good thing, good to a good club. Good luck to him. But I feel like we should look back at his career at Watford not quite as badly as I think a lot of people do.
I think that the problem Ismail Assar has is that he's kind of the poster boy for Watford's demise, isn't he? He was brought in under Grathia and then it all started going wrong and we haven't really looked back since, have we, on our downward spiral. And he's been the one constant, really, and he's got that massive price tag around his neck. I think he is a shy chap. I think his demeanour didn't help him as football supporters. We all like to see the blood and thunder and the...
There's no doubting that financially he was a massive bust. Like, we've lost a lot of money on him. Even we could have sold him last year if that deal to Villa had gone through. We might have just sort of broken even. But once you add in wages and all the payments you've got to pay in terms of add-ons and everything and sell-ons and stuff, we've lost a lot of money on him. But it's not his fault.
Well, I want to make really clear on Sarr. I was lucky enough to be at Watford for the behind-closed-doors season working for Opta. And Watford were actually a bit crap that season, in reality. They were very, very functional. And the difference in most of those games was Ismail Assar, and he was just had that little bit of extra quality that Championship defences couldn't deal with. So in terms of the financial impact, he didn't do it single-handedly, obviously, but he was a massive, massive cog in that promotion wheel, and I don't think that should be overlooked. It's difficult because obviously people weren't there, but it's hard to overstate what a sort of average side that Watford side was, really. They weren't that great to watch, and I do wonder how we, as a collective, we would have reacted to that promotion side if we'd been in the ground. I think we wouldn't have been particularly charitable because it was functional and he was the difference. So in terms of that financial spreadsheet, perhaps we can let him go even. But the same as Zhao, we knew it was coming. Probably should have happened sooner with Ismail Assar from a financial point of view. But it feels like not quite good, but we can just breathe that sort of breath and move on. We know it's been coming. Let's get on without him.
Two talented players, two experienced players also leaving on that graphic I've got on there.
Talented experienced players.
But, you know, Cleverley didn't really play much last year. Cathcart's played a lot last year. I always refer to him as he's a proper defender. He's a professional. He's there when needed. Does that feel more important that we've, or not more important, say a bigger issue, David, that we've lost the seniorness of those four compared to the talentness of the other two?
It's sometimes hard to say because we obviously we're not at the training ground in the dressing room. You can just sometimes look at a player's age and go, they must be a leader. You know, I don't know whether Craig Cathcart is a leader in the dressing room.
I don't think he was. He was never. You saw him in the pitch. He wasn't orchestrating things. He wasn't shouting things out. He wasn't sort of pointing you over there.
But he's
also leading by example.
I'm 45 and no one's ever pointed at me and said, you look like a leader.
But nonetheless, their experience on the pitch, I definitely think, will be missed. I think Cathcart has been a reliable performer. He has had his ups and downs in the last few years. Like, it was probably time for him to go. But, I think, you know, we have lost Cabasele as well, who, again, not the best on the pitch, especially in the last year or so, but been there for a long time, very clearly a big personality around the place and the dressing room and all that. So I think we have lost a lot of experience, clearly. Cleverley's still around, you know, coach with a youth team, but I guess he'll still be around in the building and stuff, and who knows whether that will have any sort of residual positive effect. I'm not sure. But it's you know, if you just look at all of the outgoings as a whole, it's a massive reset. It's the biggest reset we've had, I think. We're used to having lots of players come and go, but it definitely feels like this is the most sort of... There's like the least amount of continuity, I think, between one season to the next we've had probably since they've come in, sort of 10 years ago or whenever.
I think Craig is one of the best pound-for-pound signings that the Pozzo's ever made. I think he's been an extraordinary servant for Watford. Proper meat and potatoes defender. He's not going to get you out of your seat very often, apart from maybe to berate him for the occasional mistake. Come on, Craig, man. But I think he's been... You just know what you're going to get. We've had so many players. We've talked about the ups and downs as Watford supporters. We've seen players really let us down. We know they've been super talented and probably haven't given us absolutely everything, or perhaps the signing hasn't worked out. In terms of what we got from Craig Cathcart on the pitch, very let us down very, very rarely. And I think that doesn't happen often, especially when you play for a football club for the amount of time as Craig Cathcart did. And, of course, maintained his international play. So a good player. And the same goes for Tom, just wholehearted, been around the block, knows cliches. but I do think they had to go as well. I'm sorry to see them go from an experience point of view, because what worries me more than anything at the moment is the dressing room at Watford. It's felt to me that it's not a happy workplace. It's felt to me that they aren't people that feel empowered to go out and perform. It's not they're people who feel clear in their instructions. They're not happy in their job. And I think part of that is getting a bit of experience in the dressing room, people who can put an arm around the players when they need it, insert their boot where it needs to be inserted on different occasions. I think we're missing the balance, or have been missing the balance, between talent, experience and just that sort of, that leadership. And with those two going, there's no question it's the right time for them to go. But what's important is that they're replaced with people who are able to perhaps nurture this team and try and meld them, help the boss, or Gaffer, do we call him, Mr. Ishmael, whatever, help him meld this side into something that's going to get us off our seats and get us slightly more excited again.
Here are the current signings we made. I think I got them all. I don't know. Tom Ince is going to be the weirdest, weirdest, weirdest player I've ever have to cheer if he scores a goal. Because there's so many occasions I've hated that man. Absolutely hated him. Him and his father. I remember when they played for Blackpool, they both were lording it off at one point when they beat us. Absolute hatred for him. So I think I'm going to have a moment where he's going to score, going, "Wah, yeah!" Like, it's like this mixed world I'm going to have when he scores. But he's a man of experience. There's a lot of experience there, David, in the championship. In centre there is Jake Livermore, probably the most senior sort of player to come in. Makes sense to that what we have there. But what do you think?
I was a bit surprised by both of the signings, both of those signings in particular. They don't typically fit in with some of the players we've, you know, tend to sign under the Pots. Those don't really fit in with that model necessarily, which might be, maybe that's a sign that they're changing slightly and they think we need a different kind of player. I think Ince has still got something to offer. I think he had 14 goal involvements last season at Reading, 9 goals, 4 assists, and that's 13, isn't it? but he's clearly still got something to offer at this level, and as we've seen countless times, as we saw with like the announcement video when he signed, he's had plenty of experience scoring against us, so hopefully he's still got something left to give. But he's injured, I think, isn't he, for the first few weeks of the season?
Yeah, he
got the big exclusive, John, at the Junior Hornets.
Well, not quite. I was overhearing a conversation he had with someone else at the Junior Hornets. I took Eli along, meeting all the players, and he sort of mentioned, "Oh, I'll be out for a little bit, but not too long," I heard him say to somebody, so he might not be featuring there. But Jamal Lewis was there. I said to him, I try to do like, you know, you try and meet these players, you know, try to be cool with them and everything. I said, "Oh, so are you in a hotel at the moment? He goes, "No, I live around here." And I killed that conversation. He's experienced, but very young.
You say experienced. He's actually only played 10 games in the last two seasons.
But in the Championship, when he played, when he was at Norwich.
Yeah, no, but you know, but it's he's won the
championship. He's experienced. He's won the championship.
He's won the championship title. You talk, John, if Dave wasn't on this podcast.
He's won the championship title with Norwich. He got his big move to Newcastle, played 20 odd games, I think, under Steve Bruce that season, but he's only played 10 games in the last two seasons. I don't think he's had injury problems. I could be wrong. Basically, just think, you know, they've decided that he wasn't good enough for what they're doing up there, and obviously now they've moved into a different stratosphere. But it's going to be interesting to see whether he takes time to get going. Has his confidence been affected by playing so little football? Hopefully you'll think he'd be raring to go. As you say, very experienced in the Championship and should help us, you know, as someone who's won the league, should be able to help some of our inexperienced players move forward, hopefully.
The most pleasing thing about him is he's obviously a position that we needed filling. It was an obvious gap, and they filled it. Mm. And he's someone who has won the league with Norwich. It didn't quite work out at Newcastle. I was so hoping it wouldn't work out for Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall at Newcastle, but so far it has. Hopefully they'll sack him soon. But what I like about that signing is it was a gap. And all so often, we as supporters have watched the team in front of us and gone, well, we need that player, we need a player there, we need a player there. And Pozzo's gone, right, here's another reserve goalkeeper, or here's a conditioning coach, or here's a whatever. We needed one, we needed to end up, we got one in. So happy with that. The market, of course, the other thing we need to remember is managing, owning a football club in the transfer window must be really, really difficult, because there are clubs in much better positions than Watford, and are probably more attractive than Watford now. And that's, I think that's something that's perhaps weighed on my mind a little bit over the last couple of years, is how attractive is Watford as a venue, as somewhere to, not a venue, not a bloody nightclub, but you know what I mean, as somewhere to play your football. Because if the jungle drums are saying, well, the manager's going to be out, you'll have a different style of play next week, the owner's a nutcase, you've got this Giaretta guy wandering around, no one knows what he does, are people want to going to sign for Watford? So
yeah, but you say, you look at Inch, you look at Livermore, you look at them going, I just want to play as high as I possibly can. This is still a Championship side. You know, Jamal Lewis is again doing something similar, but somewhat slightly different approach. The other two, David, Reece Healy, I can say. Can you say the other one?
He's not that hard.
Shaq
Vertadze.
Shaq Vertadze.
I've been telling you it all day, John.
I know you have, but no, I think.
Now Pedro can't learn a little bit of English. Give us a goodbye. He can work out how to say that in Georgian. Well done.
But they are thirsty players, you hope.
Yeah, I think those two are quite exciting. I think Healy's sort of gone under the radar a little bit. No, we don't really seem to be talking about him. I'm not sure if he's quite fit yet. He doesn't seem to have been playing much in pre-season, certainly not from the start. But I think he had a serious knee injury recently at Toulouse. But before that, he scored a lot of goals in the French second division. He scored a lot of goals in the second half of the season when he was at MK Dons, I think, most recently in England. So he has got a bit of form, a bit of pedigree. There is a bit of sort of talent there, which, you know, he could come good. I heard him today compared to Adam Armstrong from Southampton and Coventry. So that sort of small striker, but good finisher, likes to get him behind. So, that, you know, he could be an exciting player. And Cheick Vertadze, I think, I'm really excited after seeing the highlights reel that some of the guys posted. I mean, he looks amazing. He's got a very strange gait. He's quite gangly. He also feels like his centre of gravity is too high, and he's sort of always toppling over. But he manages to kind of carry the ball. He likes to shoot from distance. He looks really exciting. He was very highly rated. I heard Charlie and Jacob talk to a Georgian football expert who was sort of telling his backstory. When he was sort of 17, 18, he came through the youth ranks in Dynamo Tbilisi. He was kind of like the big hope for Georgian football, and he was one of their best players at that young age. And it's sort of, for whatever reason, it hasn't really panned out for him. He didn't really kick on from his move in Belgium to what people thought would be a move to a Premier League club or a top club across Europe.
Well, it's presumably because of his gait.
Maybe. But there's definitely talent there, no doubt about it. And if he gets it right, if we can get him right, if he fits into the system, could be one of the most exciting players in the Championship, I think.
I think those two are gambles. I think Ince, Livermore and
they're Lewis. Exciting. He's they're exciting. I don't want to gamble. I want exciting.
You're talking to me.
I know, but I want exciting.
No chance. I think they're solid slot A into piece A into slot B, whatever it is. They're not going to get anyone's blood pumping necessarily, I don't think. I don't think when the Jake Livermore announcement came out, we were all sort of checking Twitter and, you know, running out of the, you know, it isn't that sort of signing at all, is it? But we talked a minute ago about how we need experience. And experience, and I talked about how much I like Craig Cathcart. He doesn't get anyone's blood pumping. No, I don't suppose many people have got Craig Cathcart tattoos or photos of him on their wall.
Anybody? Anybody? No Craig Cathcart tattoos?
Oh, they're amazing. But they are so important to football teams and to football clubs. And I think these guys on the left-hand side fit in pretty obviously to that. I like the fact we've got Tom Ince. We've a bit of snarling, sort of narky, a bit of a point to prove. Did all right at Reading last year, so I quite like that. The two on the right, they're just the jury is well and truly out. The injury thing is something that gives me sleepless nights. The amount of injuries that Watford seem to have dealt with, and I think that's one thing that we forgot about last year over Christmas and the New Year. The amount of players that were out injured was extraordinary, and then we've gone and signed two players with chronic injury records. But like you say, Dave, there's obvious talent there, and I think it probably serves us quite well as a reminder as to the pond that we're fishing in as Watford Football Club at the moment. We're talking to other fans of the Championship as to whether they see Watford as a scalp, and really the star here has faded, if we're honest. We didn't pull up any trees last year. We were a nonsense in the Premier League, really, to be honest. We surrendered that opportunity pretty limply and pretty disappointingly. And I don't think we're seen as that sort of scalp anymore. So I think it's all part of this reset, I think, is also, it's obviously on the playing staff side of things, but I think perhaps the more helpful side of it is just expectation. And I think looking at these slides here, it kind of tells us where we're at as a football club.
It tells us where we're at the minute. But I think we do have to remember that we will definitely bring in more players before the transfer window shuts. We've still got a month. We know how it always goes down to the wire. There could be a couple that turn up from Udinese last minute, but they clearly want a striker, and they clearly want a very precise type of striker. All the strikers we've been linked with, in terms of Wesley, Kiefer Moore, Alfredo Morelos, they're all big, tall, physical strikers. We clearly want a target man. Bio seems to have that shirt at the minute, as we'll look at in a minute. But there will be more people that will arrive. There'll probably be another defender. There might be another midfielder. So we shouldn't, I don't think we should get too disheartened by the fact that we've only had five in and those are the ones. We will sign more. Just hopefully they'll be good enough.
The quiz question for you, Mike. As you can see on the board, this is for everyone in the room. There is a player whose head is being hidden whilst Jamal Lewis is playing for Northern Ireland. Who is the hidden player?
His head's hidden?
Yeah, that's the game.
Oh, right.
Any guesses?
Any guesses? Stephen Berghaus, correct, Amanda. Oh, right. Yes, Watford related there. We are talking about the squad. This is where we end up. Our depth chart, we keep putting together and I spell names wrong and all the rest of it. This is sort of where we're at with the Watford squad at the moment. And Dave, there are... Well, are there gaps? There's pretty much two in every position. We're not going to get much more than that, are we?
There might still be a few that go out, I think, possibly. But I think Adam Leventhal from The Athletic said this week that Ishmael wants sort of two players for every position, wants a relatively lean squad. But I don't think there'll be a massive influx of players, but there'll be one or two at least. I think there will be another striker. I mean, you've got Shaq Ford up there and Toby Adeyemo in the striking department. Wouldn't surprise me if both of those go out on loan. I don't know if they'll be getting much football. So I think there will be another striker. I think it was a few years ago when we went into the season with only four centre-backs, and then a few of them got injured, one of them got suspended, and it was a complete disaster. So we know, hopefully they've learned their lesson there. I think we could do with another centre-back, having got rid of a few. And Tiralta looks like he'd be playing midfield anyway to start the season. As we said earlier, it's sort of a bit like, you kind of could be quite down about it, but also there are little shoots of hope here and there. You're like, he could be all right, could all knit together. But we were talking this week in the WhatsApp group about whether is this the worst squad we've had since the Pozzos have turned up?
But I also said, is this thinking where our expectations are, is this a better squad than what Sean Dyche had? Michael.
It's definitely the worst squad on paper.
Answer my question. Is it better than Sean Dyche's squad that we had?
It's definitely more talented than that squad.
Yeah.
Is it better as a team on the pitch?
It remains.
Not sure.
Yeah. So the most important part of that is the scariest man in the world. No, he's not really. Again, we went to the Junior Hornets day with Eli. He's nine, and he had his pitch taken with everybody, and he's a bit nervous. When Ishmael, Valerian Ishmael...
You're missing him so much already.
Big Val. When Big Val came in, Eli just went, oh, he's really scary. He said, he looks really strict. I went, is that a good thing? He went, yeah. So he's a fan of him. He's got to bring it together.
He has.
And that does he seem the man for you, Michael, to be the man to make them a team rather than just a collection of individuals?
I think if there is any hope about this, any hope whatsoever about this season, I think it does rest on Valerian Ismail Assar, because what we need is they do need to be licked into shape. We've had talented squads for the last two or three, four seasons. They, on paper, you'd have looked at them and gone, decent player there, decent player there, decent player there. Shoved them out on the pitch and they've been garbage, haven't they, if we're honest? And all different types of managers, head coaches, haven't been able to get a tune out of them. They just haven't been able to do it. Valerian Ismail is someone who is pretty fixed on the way he wants to play football. Dave, you mentioned on it there, he wants a lean squad. We were in the room with Gino Pozzo at the infamous event earlier in the season. Pozzo is evidently a difficult character to deal with. He's very, very confident, knows what he's doing, and it needs someone who's going to potentially stand up to him and Dutchville, whoever that is in the hierarchy that he has contact with, and sort of try to say, this is the way I'm going to play. We need someone who, in Eli's words, is scary. And I like the idea of it being a lean squad. I'd prefer it to be a lean squad with much, much better players in it. I'd certainly like it to be a lean squad with someone who could score a goal in it, because that is, for me, is the elephant in the room. Is I've no idea where the goals are coming from as it stands. Asterisk, I think we're obviously keeping the number nine shirt on ice for someone. But I think this season, our hopes rest with this man. I think him being able to turn the squad around from a team of shambolic underperformers into functional will do for me. If they take to the field on Saturday and look like they know what they're doing, they should beat QPR and they should beat other teams like that. And we struggled against teams like that week in, week out last season. It was embarrassing. We didn't look like we knew what we were doing from 1 minute to the next. And I think with Valerian Ismail, I think you will get that focus. He will have drilled it into them. He's had 7 weeks with them, not all of them, but I just think our hopes, I think it's a sensible appointment, and I think it's one that recognises the situation we're in terms of what we've got at our disposal. And it's interesting you mention Sean Dyche, John, because I think what he was best at was squeezing the absolute pips out of what he had access to. It was never the best team in the Championship. Burnley were never the best team on paper, but he knows how to get the best out of these players. And our head coaches have summarily been unable to do that to a man. However many there've been, they've failed. And I think he needs to be tough, he needs to be strong, and he needs to be focused on the way he wants to do it. And I think our hopes are hinging on him.
He needs to be supported as well, doesn't he? Obviously. Because this time last season, we were all hoping that Rob Edwards would be the man and it would be a change of direction and there was all the positive language to, you know, come hell or high water and all that. So we need to recognise our mistakes and back this manager. And the one bit of hope that I do have in this appointment compared to Rob Edwards last season is that Edwards always felt to me, and I don't know this for certain, it's just my instinct, that it was a Scott Duxbury appointment, and Scott had managed to convince Gino to go my way for a change. Let's appoint this guy. And lo and behold, Gino took 10 games and said, no, forget about him, threw Scott under the bus, and we moved on, reverted to type. Valerian Ismail seems to be more like a Gino Pozzo appointment, which is a better starting point, at least. And you hope that Gino, if it works on the pitch, if it doesn't work on the pitch, we know what will happen. We'll roll the dice, we'll go again. If it does work on the pitch, I think Gino will support him. And hopefully Gino will give him the sorts of players that he wants. But, I mean, again, that has been an issue continually in that we don't always buy the right sorts of players for the types of coaches that we have.
Just quickly, a show of hands. Who thinks Valerian Ismail is the right man?
Can we not do a show of hands because this is a podcast? Can you all make a noise? Can you go, you make a yeah, ooh, or something noise? How do you feel about what Ismail is?
Valerian Ismailasar. I think I saw three. Valerian. I think I saw three hands go up for those listening at home. Is that about right? No one else wants to put the hand up. Thinks Ismail's the right.
Who in Ismail? Who trusts in Ismail?
Has anyone got any ideas about who should have come in?
No.
Or was it just a case of not him? Here's another question then. Show of hands. Is this squad unmanageable? Yes, put your hands up. So you think it can be managed, but you don't think we're finding the right man.
I don't think I'd be putting my hand up for either of those questions at this point.
I wasn't asking you.
I know, but I'm just saying. You ask me after Saturday, I'll be a bit quicker. Ask me after 3 weeks, I'll be a much more clearer. We can't make that judgment. Dave, these are some squads that you put together for the Watford team, one for this weekend and one for a couple of weeks' time. What are you thinking then about how he's going to be playing them? Thinking, you know, knowing what he did as we know, he did brilliant stuff at Barnsley, at West Brom. He did a great start, and then he won what he sort of said to us.
Well, the interesting thing is this is roughly what we've played in pre-season, but it's not what the sort of shape that Ismail has tended to play in the past. He's previously been very wedded to a sort of 3-4-3 formation. And I tweeted out, I think, when I saw the lineup for the Palace game or something, I said, does anyone know what this system is? What does he sort of play? Is it 3-4-3? And loads of West Brom fans and journalists who'd covered him before replied to me saying, yeah, it's always 3-4-3. He never changes no matter what happens. And that was part of his downfall. But it does seem that he has changed with us. And perhaps he's, for whatever reason, because of the players he's got, or perhaps he's learned from his, you know, some of his mistakes at previous clubs, he's wanted to evolve his style. It doesn't seem like he's played as direct in pre-season as you maybe would have expected him to play, but we'll see once we actually get into the real stuff. But this looks like the sort of team we can probably expect to see on Saturday. Sierauta's like the big surprise. I don't think anyone saw that coming, that he would be the person playing defensive midfield. But I think he's important, it seems, because when we don't have the ball, I think he'll drop back and sort of create a back three with Hurt and Porteous. And it was interesting when I saw the video from Omar Rizza, who's been promoted to the first team coaching setup from the academy. He was talking about pre-season and said that basically Ismail hasn't done any work with the team himself.
Oh, great.
In possession.
Good.
He's left that all to Dean Whitehead and Rizza. And Ismail's been completely focused on Watford out of possession, which I think is his big thing in terms of where we press, getting us high up the pitch, winning the ball back high if we lose it and turning it over and all that sort of thing. So I think that is an indication into what his priorities are. I think that is probably the sort of team we'll see with Martin and Sema sort of being inverted. Bio seems to be the main striker at the moment, but you know, we all saw him last season. Hopefully that isn't his position for the whole season. But then when we move on to a few weeks' time, when Ince is fit, when Livermore's got some game time, maybe when Chakvetadze's come into things, maybe that's what it'll look like in a few weeks' time. And then I think the big name that we haven't mentioned this evening is Asprilla. I think he was one of the best things about last season. And I think if you look at Pedro's development when he started and when he came into the team, I feel like Asprilla is further ahead than Pedro was at his age. I don't think we expected much from him last season. I don't think the club expected him to play as much as he had to last season. And I think hopefully he'll have grown, he'll physically, and you know, in terms of his understanding of the game, will have come forward. And I think he could be a real plus for us this season.
He adds to the game in a different way that João Pedro does. Like his ball, that ball he put through for the goal away at Norwich was a thing of beauty. And I never remember João Pedro sort of doing that. He's all runs
João
and skills.
Pedro was rubbish.
Not the same.
I
think he'll be able to influence a game much earlier because of what he is as a player than Pedro was able to.
Could just quickly go back to the Sierra Alta in defensive midfield, Rob. I think we've skirted over that a little bit, and it's probably been the one that's raised eyebrows the most, I think, amongst Watford supporters. It feels like that's what's going to happen. So I know this is an audio medium, so if you think that's a good idea and could work, after three, can you just say man bun really, really loudly? So if you think Sierra Alta is going to do a good job there and you think that's a good idea, after three, nice big loud man bun. One, two, three. Yeah! Who was it? What a legend. So what I'm getting so far, chaps, from the audience is no one likes the manager. No one thinks his tactics are going to work. I reckon you lot are more negative than me. This is absolutely amazing. Anyway, Dave, sorry, interrupt.
But you are you know, solid in terms of way. You think that's how he's going to be consistent. You say he was doing one thing and was very rigid with that at the other clubs. Do you not think maybe there's a possibility he's doing what he's doing because of what he has fit and developed with him, and we might go back to what he's happy with?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's obviously one to keep an eye on over the first few games of the season. Maybe it's always that's always the sort of conundrum for a new coach, I suppose. Do you stick to your system regardless, which is what Rob Edwards did last season despite not having the players, and I think that's one of the reasons that it didn't go so well for him? Or do you try and adapt? Do you try and be flexible? You'd like to think that all coaches are skilled enough to be flexible, and I think it's probably a good sign that he looks like he is prepared to do things differently, because all the people that replied to me when I put that tweet out, they was very much replying in the negative sense that yes, the 3-4-3 is what he plays and it's been a problem because he never changes it. So if he's evolving, I think that's a good thing.
We shall see on Saturday and what happens. But we, of course, have the conversation that's been going on for the last week about the captaincy. Firstly, Mike, who's your favourite captain ever?
John Eustace.
Who's favourite captain ever, Michael?
Birdseye.
What for captain ever?
I'd John Eustace. Because just he's my favourite person ever. Although it's interesting, because I always used to hold John Eustace up as the best captain ever, because I used to think he was defending our honour almost with the referee. You used to see him chasing back, having a go at the ref, having a go at the linesman, kicking the opposition. And I quite like that. I'm quite a basic person. and I just quite like to see someone in the ref's ear. And actually, we spoke to someone who listened to the podcast, who is an official themselves, and they're friends with an EFL official. And he, because I've talked about this on the pod a lot, I want my captain to be in the ref's ear, in the linesman's ear, representing for Watford, not letting the others get away with the dark arts. And this guy said, he'd spoken to this EFL official and said, actually, it's the exact opposite of what you want as a captain, because it just becomes white noise, a bit like me when I'm talking for you lot. But it's you overblow it, and people like John Eustace, they're just obviously still an absolute legend. But that's not what you want as a captain in the modern game. The refs sort of ignore it. They don't react to it. So he definitely is my favourite captain. But I think it's a different job now, potentially, than it was a decade, 20 years ago.
One of the captains that I most respected was probably Robert Page. Firstly, part of the promotion, but also how he dealt with and was the leader in that dressing room when all the financial things weren't going as they should have been.
Every time you mention Robert Page, no, if anyone else has noticed this, I'd be amazed. Obviously, he lifted a trophy at Wembley for Watford. And we've all dreamt about that moment, about a Watford player lifting the trophy. And the guy who was announcing it on the PA, I don't know who it was, but he said Watford just before Page lifted the trophy. So the big roar came, the one that I've been dreaming of since I was a kid. I told this is very niche, I apologise. But so he goes, Watford, and everyone cheers. And then like about a second later, the trophy goes up. I'm like, he ruined it. Did anyone else notice?
No.
I don't think we need to worry about that scenario this season, though. So I think you're okay.
But that sort of hit for me, what Page was a club captain, Dave. So that's what we know that Daniel Barkman is. He's the club captain.
John Backman.
Backman is the club captain. That's...
club captain.
And there is a different role between what Mike's talked about in terms of what John Eustace is on the pitch and what the club captain should be.
I suppose so. I mean, they can often be the same person. I think last season, obviously, Cleverley was club captain but was never fit enough to play. So we had to have a captain on the field. But Backman is going to play every game, so I imagine he'll have the armband for every game. And there was obviously a lot of reaction when that was announced. And I think you can have legitimate criticisms of Backman. I think there are obviously some things that he's not very good at, but he has had his moments. He kept us in a lot of games last season. I think last season was one of his better seasons since he's been in the team. And if you look around the squad, he is he's probably the most senior player, isn't he? I mean, Livermore obviously is more experienced, but he's only just joined the club. A lot of people have sort of been, I've seen online sort of saying Porteous, but I think that's probably just because he's a centre back and he's sort of a bit aggressive, but he's still quite young. He's not played that much football, really. So I think I can understand why they've made that decision. And I also think that captaincy does tend to get slightly overvalued by fans. Who was Man City's captain last season? It was Ilkay Gundogan.
Yeah.
Not a player who you would necessarily think was like, you know, a top-thumping sort of big centre-half or anything. Little midfielder who was brilliant. And I think there have been plenty of examples of good captains over the years who aren't necessarily your typical captain types. We've obviously had the experience of having Troy Deeney be our captain, who was more than a captain. You know, he had the armband, but even when he didn't have the armband, he was still the captain. So we are... You've got to work with what you've got, I suppose. And I think it's not a bad choice, but I do understand some of the misgivings, but I do think that, you know, a lot of it probably went a bit too far.
I just wonder whether it's another unwanted reminder, perhaps, as to where we are, that we haven't got anyone else. He basically, Backman has, I think, ended up being captain by dint of there being anyone else that could take the armband.
In theory, summed up in some ways the end of the Huddersfield game, how he acted, summed up everything that was wrong with that team last year.
Absolutely.
But you're right. Who else would be the club captain at this point?
And I just wonder whether, as supporters, it's kind of an unwelcome reminder. It's just making it crystal clear to us the state of the squad, and not the state of the club, that's sort of overplaying it a little bit, but we're scrabbling around a little bit in key positions. We're talking about, it's 48 hours until QPR. We still haven't got a number nine. The club captain is debatable. And I think you're right, Dave. I think he gets a lot of criticism, and a lot of it justly so. But his shot stopping, I think, which for a goalkeeper tends to be pretty high on the list, is good. He does good work in that regard, of really clutching at scrawls here.
You don't want one captain. You want multiple captains and multiple leaders.
Everyone hates the boss.
Right.
Everyone hates the squad, and everyone hates the captain.
Okay. That's just the leftovers from last year, how we're all feeling. Maybe those haven't disappeared quite yet. We went on Saturday, it'd be perfect. It'd be great.
It's a massive opportunity for him, though. And I think what we want is for people to move forward. What we want is for people to improve on last year. And I think he will recognise that he's stuffed up. We were very, very critical, me in particular, on the podcast after the Huddersfield debacle. It was shameful. And he lost his head and embarrassed himself and the club and us, really.
You could spin that any way you want, though. You could spin that into saying, well, at least he looked like he cared. And Troy wasn't adverse to losing his head at times. He did it many times over the years. And yeah, in that moment, he lost it. But we kind of all did. It was kind of the explosion after sort of 9 months of just this simmering sort of build up, and he was happened to be the guy that was there at the moment when it all spilled over, and he lost the plot. But I saw, I think Jordan from the Watford Buzz Pod was tweeting about this in the week and saying that one thing we should perhaps remember is that maybe it will do him some good.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll improve because he feels that sense of responsibility. Maybe he'll grow a bit. You know, maybe he'll stick his chest out and become a little bit more than what he's been. It's not. You know, it's a very simplistic way of looking at things, that the captain needs to be the big leader. And it's just not how modern football works.
And the other thing is, Valerian Ismail has been working with these guys for 7 years. Good luck, mate. 7 years. Jesus. But
it's a world record Watford manager.
Seven weeks. And he's been working with them week in, week out, day in, day out. So he knows what he's got to choose from. And if he said that he's his captain, then at this stage, it's good enough for me. And I think the thing that we should be hopeful as supporters, and we should hope that these guys want to represent the club the way we want them to represent it. And you'd like to think that Dan Backman went to bed that night thinking, that is amazing. He's proud of A, wearing the shirt, and B, wearing the captain's armband. He's going to be leading the team out on the opening day. And for a professional, that is something. It means something. And I think as supporters, we've got to get behind that and hope that he grasps the nettle? If grasping the ball would be bloody good at some stage, I guess, but just going out and really building on it and using it as a springboard. And if he's successful in that role, there's no reason that the others can't be as well. Am I convincing anyone here?
No,
I didn't think so.
Well, you're not convincing me, but I know you too well. Pre-season, Mike, there were the results. Bournemouth 0-0, Arsenal 1-1, lost to Crystal Palace. We won against Peterborough. Nothing to take from that, really, is there?
I'm going to go off on
that. And it feels weird as well, because we got to see nothing of this 7-week pre-season.
Thank God.
Really?
I'm going to go off on another bit of a tangent here. This is the original one of these shirts, and it's got the old Football League...
There you go, that's nice.
Old Football League badge on it. And if I say mercantile credit, does that mean anything to anyone? So back in the days, it was called the Mercantile Credit Classic, and it was at Wembley. And I think I must have been about 7 or 8. And I couldn't have been more excited about this game. I think it was in England 11 against the rest of the world 11. And Maradona was playing. And that was in the days when there wasn't Twitter, there wasn't social media, there wasn't football on the TV. We would get to watch Maradona at Wembley. And I was absolutely buzzing for it. John McLennan was playing as well. So that gave it a little bit of a what. Does anyone remember this? Mercantile cricket? Yeah. Yes, good. And I watched it. And it was crap. It was really bad. And I remember being building up to, you're going to see Maradona. Watch, and it was just like, and I think from that day on, I've been sort of friendlies. No, take them all even.
No. We didn't get to see enough, though, Dave, to feel confident. Like that whole thing we've been talking about with everyone now, they're feeling about what Valerian's doing, what the squad's going to do, are these sort of right signings? Because we really haven't felt like we've seen, especially this last weekend, that last weekend, the last game before the first game, last pre-season before the first game of the season, nothing really to grab hold of and to try and make sense of. It feels like we're distant.
I was actually quite disappointed that we didn't have a friendly the week before the start of the season at Vicarage Road, because, yeah, they might be crap games or whatever, and the players, you know, aren't putting it in a week before the start of the season. But I do like that sort of semi-sort of tradition of going along and just getting a bit of a feel for it, seeing the new players for the first time. I think it is a bit strange we've just kind of gone to a completely behind-closed-doors season. I mean, there was fans at Bournemouth, I think, weren't there? But all the rest of the games have been at even training grounds. You can't really count a training ground friendly as part of pre-season.
Who scored a goal in a game in pre-season?
It was Kone.
Yeah. His first goal for Watford? No, that doesn't count.
Definitely doesn't count.
It does not count.
Not at all. So it is a bit hard to sort of know. We didn't really know what the lineup was last week against Peterborough, but I think it seems to have been fairly consistent throughout. But it was interesting that we didn't go away and they decided that we would all stay in. We came back quite early as well. So he has worked with them for quite a long time. Relatively settled squad. We got Sarr out of the way early. Pedro was gone ages ago. There hasn't been much sort of, you know, it's not like, for example, we'll talk about some of the other clubs, but like Southampton have got James Ward-Prowse and Lavia still in their squads, who are probably still going to play at the weekend, but then might go the week after. There's not that sort of unsettled nature to our squad at the moment.
Yeah, it's different from last year where we were worried about maybe all three of them leaving at one point. We spent most of August going, which one? Or is all of them going? We're sort of the opposite way around now. We're waiting to see who can we bring in, who is free that we can take from somebody else.
Do you think the fact that they've been behind closed doors, and secretive is the wrong word, but we haven't really had access to any of them apart from the Bournemouth game, do you think that speaks to the fact that they're trying to give Valerian Ismail a chance just to drill them, well, get them used to the shape?
And I think what I thought about you about saying, are they giving him the opportunity to try things out without having people moaning?
Yeah, basically.
And the response that you get on social media, you know, picking apart every single thing he did when he knew and they all knew that it wasn't in the right place and
wasn't
going to be good quickly.
Are they thinking that the entertainment value of a friendly, when what they're really working on is out of possession shape, is that what people want to do on a Saturday, the last Saturday afternoon before the season starts against a Peterborough reserve side? It's nice, you know, it's nice to get back to Vicarage Road, but I think for me, I can do without the friendlies. The curse of the Mercantile Credit Classic has done me in. But I do wonder, I think there is method in the madness. I don't think they're trying to keep us away from seeing the team necessarily. I just think that it's probably approaching pre-season friendlies the way they should be, which is professionally. They're not for public consumption. They're about fitness. They're about tactics. They're about getting players used to each other. And I think perhaps getting aerated about missing a pre-season friendly is perhaps.
I think it probably just underlines just sort of where we are as well. And if we had managed to stay in the Premier League in the last few seasons, there's a chance we would have been playing in the summer series in New York or in LA or somewhere out there. And instead, we're playing against a Peterborough 11.
I mean, we've got to face facts. You look on news. How good did we have it? Well, looking back, Capu, Delafeu, Pereira, I came on this podcast and moaned about all of them relentlessly. Oh, he doesn't care. He's not giving it his all. He's not very good. We should be better after Christmas than we are. It was incredible. What a side we had. What football we were playing. And where we are now, it's... You watch YouTube and look back at those games that we had, the under Marco Silva, for example. Just absolutely extraordinary. And I think we do have to recognise that that a fall from there to where we are now, talking about Bayo leading the line on Saturday, for heaven's sake, is a significant fall, and it's quite traumatic for all of us. So I'm
but
glad
that
we're
was
all here.
That was a Premier League division, Dave. We're in the Championship now. It's a different Championship than last year because there's ones that come up and ones that go down.
I was grieving there, John. You weren't letting me get into it.
I know. I'm fed up of it. No. So, Dave, what are we looking at? Do you think in terms of this division? It's always a weird division and a crazy division, and you don't quite know what to expect from everybody. You can make lots of assumptions, but I think there's a thing when I see everyone listing their who's going to be in these positions. It's a ridiculous thing to do. Who do you think would be top half, middle, and bottom? I get that, but to place them perfectly, it always seems a bizarre thing to do. Do you think it is clear this year because of teams like Southampton and Leicester?
I think it's a better division than last season. I think last season's standard was actually quite poor. I mean, if you look how close we were to the playoffs, given how we didn't put a run together all season, even right at the end, after we'd lost a few games and kind of given up, we still could have got in right at the end. So I think the standard this season will go up. I think the teams coming down, Southampton, Leeds and Leicester, will all be strong. Leicester, they didn't really sign many players for the last sort of year and a half they're in the Premier League. So they've lost a few since going down, but they've still kind of got like a squad that was kind of not good enough for the Premier League in the end, but should be really good in the Championship. Still got Jamie Vardy, who should be all right in the Championship, you'd expect. And they've got their new coach, Maresca, used to be Pep Guardiola's assistant. A lot of Pep's assistants have gone on to be very good in the last few years. Look at Arteta. There's plenty more where that came from. Xavi at Barcelona. So I think they have got reasons to be confident they could bounce back quickly. Leeds have appointed Daniel Farke, who has won the Championship twice. They've not really lost any of their players. They've spent a lot of money in the last few seasons on players that didn't quite work out for whatever reason. But you know, a player like Nonto should be one of the best players in the Championship next season, I think. And I think Elland Road and the atmosphere and everything means that it will be a difficult place to go, and I think they'll be good enough. And Southampton, as we said, Ward-Prowse and Lavia are the two that they're kind of still trying to hold on to, and they'll probably both go. But they've as well got a squad that seems quite kitted out for the Championship. And they've got Russell Martin as their coach, who's never actually very highly rated, but hasn't actually sort of finished in the top six or got a team promoted, but seems to be talked about as one of these coaches who knows sort of the right way to play football and is very promising. So those three are going to be strong. Much stronger than us and Norwich were last season coming down, I think. I think coming up, you've got Ipswich, who are like really highly fancied. A lot of the bookies have got them pretty sure odds to finish in the playoffs. I think one of the podcasts I listened to this week, they're not the top 20 podcast, which is a really good EFL pod, had them finishing third. They were superb last season in League One. They've got Kieran McKenna, who used to be at Manchester United, another highly rated coach. Plymouth actually finished above them in League One, another team fancied to do well. And then you've still got teams like Middlesbrough, who were unlucky last season. I think, they've still got Akpom. He hasn't left yet. They're expected to do well. Sunderland did well. Stoke have spent a lot of money. Coventry have spent a lot of money and were good last season. So I think there are a lot of teams who will fancy their chances. And I don't think we're anywhere near most of them.
Tremendous. Well, I think, basically, I think it's that the division's concertinaed. So I think the teams coming down are decent. The teams coming up are pretty good as well. So the whole thing's squashed down into like a casserole of pretty... Do you squash a casserole?
The good news is that QPR are favourites to be relegated.
Yeah.
So there's at least one that we should win on Saturday.
there's nowhere to hide in this division this year. I think the away games look tough. The teams that have come up, I think, Rotherham, they're probably not going to be great shakes. If Plymouth get off to a good start, they're going to be decent. But everyone else is going to be a challenge.
And Tom Brady's in at Birmingham.
Yeah.
Deflating. Well, that's a battle, really. Is it, who's the better-looking person at Birmingham now, Mike? Is it John Eustace or is it Tom Brady?
Look, what John Eustace did for Turkish teeth aligning, John Eustace for me every time. I think the bottom line is, and it's the same for us as every other club, it's going to be vital that we get off to a good start. There's nowhere to hide in this division. If we show weakness like we did last year, we'll get slaughtered. We will end up in a complete mess again. And it won't take long for us to turn. Because we all know how fed up we were last year. It felt like there was no joy at Vicarage Road, was there? There was no joy away from Vicarage Road. So the optimism that we're feeling tonight ahead of a new season will quickly ebb away if Watford don't have a good start. There is nowhere to hide in that division. You can't pick who's going to go get up and go down. you just know it's going to be hard. And I think that the pressure is on Watford and Valerian Ismail and this squad, such as it is, to have a good start. So for us, the start is everything.
But what if, Michael, and we asked the rest of the From the Roofing gang, Geordie, Colin, Kieran and Jason, who are all on holiday, back ready for Saturday, of course. What if Watford just do finish eighth? What if this season just finishes Watford being eighth? What would make a good enough season? So we asked them and they sent us some videos. They're all on holiday and you can all tell they haven't had a shave.
So for the coming season, whether we finish 8th or 18th, what I really want is to get that sense of progress back, to feel that we've hit the bottom, if you like, as far as we're going to decline in this cycle, and to start seeing the shoots of our future, whether that is a few wins, whether that is some certain players coming in, whether there's some consistency in the on the bench or some clear strategies in the transfer market. I don't really care about an individual thing. What I want to feel is that overall sense of progress, that this is as bad as it's going to get, and that we're on our way back.
The main thing for me is something that shows we are heading in the right direction as a football club. A team that gels well, that plays together, that plays for each other, that plays for the fans. Forget the last few seasons that have been pretty horrendous, and let's get back on the right track with some sort of identity. And I think finally, what I'd like to see is if we finish eighth or below or whatever, I want us to be finishing there with Valerian Ismail. Forget this, get rid of the coach at the first sign of trouble. Let's try and show we're building something for once. And that, to me, I think that's what I would like to see.
I think for me, it's hoping that by the end of the campaign, we have formed some form of identity. Because I think the last few years, we've certainly lacked that. Don't really know what the playing style is. Don't really know what the club is about on the field. So I'd like to think that at the end of the year, we have established some form of playing style, some form of identity that we can all buy into, because in the past couple of years, I'm not sure that we've had that. So that, for me, would be a successful season and hopefully something that we can take into the next few years.
I think if we came eighth, we'd feel a bit disappointed, possibly. I was looking at the squad today and I was thinking, yeah, that squad looks like it could be quite good. Like, that could challenge, maybe. Some good players. But for me, compared to last season, what I really want to see is just some committed play. Players that look like they want to play for the club, that want to give that extra bit of effort, which we didn't really get last season, especially the second half of the season. And maybe a cup run. I mean, it would be nice if we didn't get knocked out of the Carabao Cup by a lower league team in the middle of August. So I would quite like that, because cup runs are great for fans, aren't they? And you look forward to the draw and then the next, you know, the away game, how are we going to get there, all that sort of stuff. So I think maybe a nice cup run, finishing eighth, would be a bit disappointing, but doesn't mean that it would be a disappointing season, because as we know, football isn't just about the football, is it? It's about the friends you go with, the family and so on. But the other thing, of course, is that going up, playoffs, it's a bit of a poison chalice, I think, at the moment. Premier League isn't really ready for smaller clubs. You know, Sheffield United did really well to get promoted with Heckenbottom, with a quite average squad. They've sold their striker. Now they think, well, they've got absolutely no chance of staying up. So you're kind of committing your fans to a season where you basically get beat every week, and that's not much fun. So the idea that the only thing that matters in the Championship is you get promoted, I think, is a false aim. It's a false desire, false ambition, possibly. So, yeah, some good football, some committed players, maybe some young academy players, that would make it feel good, and a cup run. And finishing eighth, yeah, that would hurt a little bit, but especially if we've been in and around the playoffs. But you just never know in the Championship. Anything can happen. We could get promoted as champions.
At the end! At the end, he's got it. Positivity, Michael. Grab it.
I'm no oil painting. I'm well aware of that. But you did tell the guys they're actually going to be seen. Their faces are going to be seen.
Don't video it, I said, yes.
Goodness gracious. Bit of care in your appearance, lads. Finish as champions. I mean, Colin looks mad and sounds it as well. I mean, look, for me,
it's like expectations, isn't it, really?
They all hinted at it, I think, and they say how I feel, which is we want a football team that we could be proud of, a football team that we can enjoy going to watch. For me, I've seen, we're so lucky as Watford supporters to have seen it all. We've had Wembley heartache, we've had Wembley joy, we've had cup final letdowns, we've had cup semi-final despair and joy. We've had the lot. We've been so lucky, and I've been lucky enough to be there to see most of it. But what brings me the most joy is that feeling of sharing in it and believing in it. And just doing it together, however Watford manifests itself at that time, we're all in it together. And that just hasn't been the case for the last two, three, four seasons. And it's certainly not our fault. It's the way the club has just ended up in this situation. And I think for me, Jason said if the manager can be there at the end of the season, that would be massive, I think, for all of us. I don't think, again, we won't be out in the streets of Watford honking our horns, raising aloft that we kept our manager for a season cup, will we? But it will be a step in the right direction, because you cut off my grieving process earlier. But I do think that as Watford supporters, we've got a bit of healing to do. We've got to go back to remembering why we used to go to Vicarage Road with a spring in our step. And it wasn't just because we were beating Arsenal, beating Man United, beating Tottenham. I mean, it helps, but it's not really it. It's about having a team that you can see what they're trying to achieve. And whether they're playing, you know, Boreham Wood or Bolton or whoever, or Barcelona, if that team is out there representing you and what we all feel in here for them, that really is good enough. And I think we're obviously at a bit of a crossroads. We've cleared the decks. We're obviously having to trim the financial purse strings. You see why I'm skint. But you know what I mean? We're having to cut back. We're having to cut our cloth accordingly pretty quickly. And so we know where we're at, and I just want us to be, I want us to be a team, I want us to be a club, and I want us to be united, and that would be good enough for me. And I think eighth is optimistic for me. I think mid-table, but going out and us getting off our feet, getting chants going, singing together, and walking home, talking about the things we love about football and the things we love about Watford, as opposed to moaning about, justifiably moaning, I hasten to add, but just, we need a spring in our step back.
I understand why you want those things, and I want them too. I'd love for us to be a more united team, to play more like a team, to put all the negativity behind us of the last few seasons. But really, there's only two outcomes in the world that we live in. It's Gino's house, and we've got to live by Gino's rules, sadly. And eighth place, muddling along to eighth place, doesn't happen under him. Because if we are doing that, if we're showing signs that we're going to be mid-table, midway through the season, he will pull the trigger in an attempt to get us back up the table. Of course, we've seen by now that that's self-defeating. That's obvious. But you know, anyone who was in the room, as far as I'm aware, from what I've heard from people who were there with Gino a few weeks ago in that meeting, knows that he isn't going to change. So in a way, the reason to be optimistic is that if we do get all those things that you wish for, we'll probably be in the top six. If Valerian Ismail was here at the end of the season, it means that we will have gone close or been promoted. Valerian Ismail will not be here at the end of the season if we're 14th. So I hope that we can be cohesive. I hope that he can be the man to knit us together and to really stop Gino from being Gino. Because when it has gone well in the past, it's fine. Gino wants us to win football matches. And his methodology can be questioned and has been questioned. But I don't think we're going to get this sort of wish that we can just have a nice old season in mid-table like the old days, because that's just not where we are.
You said hope a lot there, Dave. Dreams are things we always think about, Mike. And you got to live a dream. And I knew that we're going to have to lift everybody up at the end of this podcast we're recording with a special moment for you. Do you remember that moment?
I do. And If we get a moment as memorable as this season, then I think we'll be, well, you lot will be happy. I won't.
Do you remember can you give us context of what actually happened?
So this was, well, I'll just say, no. Roll VT, I'll tell you after.
Who are those people?
Thank you.
So first, what are 24 hours?
First things first, right, Backman, that's how you do it. So, and it's slightly grainy footage, so if you weren't aware, that was me saving a penalty against Tommy Mooney at Vicarage Road the day before the FA Cup final. And I think in a lot of ways, that sort of 24 hours sums up what being a Watford fan is like. The joy of playing and...
humiliating a legend.
Just humiliation, yeah. Yeah, the joys, the highs of playing in front of a packed Vicarage Road Stadium, looking forward to the FA Cup final the next day. And if I may, I had to be in a wheelchair because I was, Kate, sympathy for you at the moment, but I did a little bit on the BBC that morning at the FA Cup final. And so they got me in position, did my bit. And then basically they just left me there on the concourse at Wembley. And they went up to a wide shot of Dan Walker, who was doing a bit in the Royal Box. And this was all going on live. And I just kept getting messages on my phone. And there was three or four people that just sent me a picture of Brian Potter. I don't know if you're not aware who Brian Potter is. He's a character from Phoenix Nights. He's in a wheelchair and he basically drinks pints of, well, a bit of Sam Allardyce-esque, really. Anyway, he's a comedy figure in a wheelchair. And I thought, what on earth are you getting pictures of Brian Potter for? And then someone sent me a screenshot of Dan Walker doing his piece to camera from the Royal Box. And the bottom left, you can just see me sat in a wheelchair just going, can someone come and help me? So, yeah, if that doesn't sum up life as a Watford fan, from the highs to the lows, I don't know what is. But if we get a moment like that, surely we'll be laughing, won't we?
Well, we hope, and we always keep hoping with Watford fans. Thank you so much for everyone who's come down this evening. Massive thank you to Tom and the team here at Mad Squirrel for hosting us and allowing us to do this in front of you all. Thank you very much to Mike.
Yeah, before we were going to do the showbiz thing.
The showbiz
I'm going to get
thing.
A selfie to prove that people actually came out to listen to us. Because it still absolutely blows my mind. This is the 14th year we've been doing this.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me that anyone would even think about putting my voice anywhere near their ears, let alone come out on a Thursday night. So we're going to do a quick selfie, if that's all right.
Yeah.
If everyone can give us a big
wave,
man bun, or just a wave, or we'll get...
Perfect. Thank you so much. We will be back, of course, with our 14th season of From the Rooker End, but you will be changing the day you'll be listening to us. We will be out on a Tuesday morning. We decided not to try and spend our weekend doing a podcast, so we'll be recording a Monday night, ready for your Tuesday mornings, and if there's nothing you do, is refresh your podcast feed on a Tuesday morning where you can listen to From the Rooker End. So that is what we're doing. But also, with Kieran, who you saw earlier on, Kieran is our women's football expert. We will be doing a monthly women's podcast as well, which you could hopefully get hold of, and so there'll be more From the Rookery End for our 14th season of following the Mighty Hornets.
Just to reiterate, thank you to everyone that's listened throughout the 14 years. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you for coming out tonight, and just I really want to get that back. I know I'm the emotional one when it comes to Watford, and it just means so much to me, this sort of Watford family that we've got going on here. I know it sounds a little bit namby-pamby, but it just makes it all worthwhile. I mean, I just hope that we can stick together, get to Vicarage Road, get to enjoying it, getting behind the Golden Boys. We can be critical when it's deserved. Call stuff out that we don't think is right, because I think that's our job as supporters as well. If we think things are going badly, we can call it out. That's our job. We are the most important people when it comes to this football club. It's obviously Gino's toy set at the moment, but we'll be here long after they've gone. So I think we have got a job to do. We have got a role, and we can play it. We've proved that we can do it in the past. Let's do it again. And I think we've all shown in various ways what we can achieve when we stick together. And if we do that as a supporter base, I think Vicarage Road will be a fun place to go again. So thank you, everyone.
You are...